Session number 8227.
Brigadier Rackham, tape 3. So when you joined the Hawk Battalion, what was your role there? What were you actually doing in your trenches? Can you remember your duties?
Well, I, of course, was the junior and the youngest officer in the battalion, and I was soon dubbed Baby Rackham, and which I'm still known as. A.P. Herbert was at the bottom of it, but I said to him, "Why do you call me Baby?" He said, "Well, one, because he's the youngest, and two, because you're BB, which is half baby."
And what did you have to do? What was your task?
Commanding a platoon.
What did that consist of?
Consisted of about five non-commissioned, well, five petty officers and 20 or 30 ratings.
What would your daily routine have been?
What?
Your daily routine?
Well,
of this
it
group?
Depends now. In the, you must realise that on the peninsula at Helles, you were never not subject to shell fire. You might get it anywhere. But if you were in the reserve camp, as it were, which meant living underground in these dugouts that were made, you would not able to move much about in the daytime because it would attract fire. But we did have bathing parties and all that, that went down and had a good wash. And washed our clothes. When I arrived, jaundice was very rife, but jaundice was not sufficient to evacuate people, so the end of people was jaundice.
How did that affect them when one had jaundice? What sort of effects did it have on you?
Lethargy. It made them very lethargic.
Would that have been dangerous, given the vulnerable situation you were in, if men became lethargic?
It didn't help matters, certainly, but as the weather cooled off, the jaundice seemed to cool off.
So it was very much associated with the hot weather, you
yes,
think?
Yes, I think so, yes.
What else would you have done in your daily routine? What sort of tasks would you... You said sometimes you went and had a bathe, you were bathing. How about your sort of looking after the trenches? Was much needed there?
Yes, we were always improving our camps, you know, making more comforts and... we couldn't do very much, and the food was extremely monotonous, and of course at that time the flies were dreadful.
Yes, I suppose it was hot when you arrived, was it? The
hot,
weather was
yes,
very hot.
Yes, hot at first, yes.
How did your trenches compare with those in France that you experienced later? Would you have needed deep trenches on Gallipoli? Were they very deep?
Oh, no, they were just 7 or 8 feet deep, I suppose, with a fire step. You see, when you got up and you could just see over the top on the fire, from the fire step. But you couldn't show your head in the ordinary way. Otherwise, because the lines, you see, sometimes were as near as 20 yards apart. The Turkish line, our own line, or up to say 100 yards.
Were you ever that close to the Turks? Did you go to the very front line?
Oh yes, we took our tour of duties.
Was that pretty? The bombardment then pretty fierce from the Turkish side? Did you find?
Occasionally, and there was one very intense after Suvla had been evacuated. There was a very intense bombardment. We lost, I should think, even in the trenches, 20 or 30 men. and two officers. When I say lost, wounded, not all killed.
Did the Royal Navy help at all? Did they bombard the Turks from the sea? Were they able to do that from Helles?
Oh yes, they did, but very limited. The Navy at this time were very scared about submarines.
Were they?
Oh yes, and of course they sent out these monitors with great 16-inch guns. With their great blisters on the side, and all the cruisers had blisters, which were supposed to explode the torpedo and not the ship.
Yes. What were these blisters, actually?
Well, they were built out from on the side of the ship. They were built out from the ship, extended a sort of extra wall, you see, so that the torpedo would hit the blister and explode on the blister and not damage the ship so much.
Did that happen? Were they effective?
Well, they were effective, I think, yes, but there went all that number of submarines, of course. It wasn't really... They just didn't know how dangerous it was, but there weren't many submarines about, really.
When the Navy did fire on the Turks, was there ever the danger that their fire would fall short on the British troops, the Allied troops?
Well, not at that stage, but I think there was when the real movement was on in the early days.
That happened, you think?
I don't like to say it did happen. I don't really know.
No. Right.
It's always a danger. I mean, and of course, you know well enough it happened. Well, it happened all right at... the Suvla offensive, or at least the Anzac offensive, when Major Allison got to the top and then was shelled off, he always alleged it by the Navy. But that's all in a matter of history, all in the books.
How about communication lines in the trenches? Were these adequate?
You mean the communicating trenches?
Yes, the actual lines of communication. One trench communicating with another. How did you do this?
Well, just another trench, but of course, when you say communication trenches, I mean the trenches leading up to the various lines.
Yes.
They were much bigger and wider than the fire trenches.
Did you have any telephone system, telegraph system within the trench system? Did you have any wireless set up?
Oh, yeah, well, no wireless. No, we had field telephones on wires, which were always being cut.
Was that a great problem, your field telephone system?
Oh, yes, it was, yes. But there was no suggestion of wireless in those days. Not with us. I mean, it may have been at a higher level, but not with us.
How about the use of barbed wire? Did you use barbed wire in your trenches there?
Yes, and so did the Turks. Barbed wire. Automatic fire, automatic and rifle fire, and the barbed wire dominated the battlefield in those days.
What was the degree of your protection in the trenches in Gallipoli compared with the Somme and, say, Passchendaele, which I think you later experienced? Did you feel...
Passchendaele, there were hardly any trenches, it was all mud. And there were just these little strong points at the various little farmhouses that were just above the mud.
So you would have been relatively better off on the peninsula there?
Oh, yes.
How about the Somme? How did it compare with that?
Well, the Somme, you're all right in the trenches. Except from, shell fire always damages the trench and knock you out.
What were the general communications like in the area between the various units? Was that effective, do you think, the communication system? Were you kept abreast of what was developing on the peninsula as a whole?
Oh, well, yes, we had intelligence reports sent round occasionally, but no newspapers, any of that sort.
What were the main modes of transport on Helles in that area? How did your food and supplies come up to you?
Well, they would come by ship and land at the beaches and then be transported mainly as far as they could by mules and after that manual.
Were you kept well supplied with equipment and ammunition? You know, did you generally have most things you needed there?
Yes, you can say that, yes.
Can you remember any particular incident, any sort of operation you were involved in that you could describe for us? Any period of extreme bombardment or shelling?
Well, as I said, there was this intense bombardment after Suvla. Of course, we were always, when we were in the front line, patrols and occasionally a raid into the Turkish trenches.
Is there anything particular that sticks in your mind? Any raid that you participated in or patrol that you could describe for us to give us some idea of what your life was like?
Well, we carried out a short raid on the Turkish trenches in order to get, we were told to get an identification. And we got into the Turkish trench and knocked out one Turk, didn't kill him, but knocked him out and dragged him back. And then we hand him over, of course, to the intelligence people, and they took him.
And that would have been to have gained information from him?
Oh, yes, to identification and see who was there, what division, what Turk.
What were the Turkish trenches like, if you went into that one, compared with your own? Were they as deep and as well dug?
No, they were just deep, but not well dug or riveted or looked after.
You maintained
yours
well?
Very dirty.
Were they? Yours were well maintained, were they, and repaired all the
time?
Well,
they were clean, yes, I'll say that, yes.
What was the terrain like around the Helles area? Could you sort of describe what you could see? Would it mainly have been sort of scrub?
Yes, entirely. There was, of course, personally, there was the great cliffs up. And then when you got up to the cliffs, it was really a saucer, you might say, a big saucer. You could see all over the place. And then straight up the peninsula, there was Akibaba looking at you.
Would you have seen any buildings of any description?
Well, just a few ruins in the village of Krithia.
Was that a ruin by the time you got there?
Yes. And, of course, there was the forts at just above V Beach, Cape Helles itself, which had been destroyed by the Navy.
Krithia was a ruin, was it, by September?
Oh, yes.
What was the degree of visibility like on the peninsula? Could you see a long distance?
Oh, marvellous visibility, yes. It was really a wonderful sight. Most days were lovely sunshine, and to see the whole peninsula and over to Asia and see the cruisers around and the Navy and the blue sea. It was really a magnificent sight if it hadn't been so grim.
Yes, looking at some of your pictures, Norman Wilkinson, there is a great beauty about the place, it struck me. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would.
Was there much more evidence of battle on the terrain, apart from the fact that you saw the ruined forts and the ruins of Krithia? When you looked at the actual terrain around you, was there much evidence of battle?
No, not really much in a general sort of way, but when you got down to particulars, there were no end of crosses, you see, where people had been buried. They were buried rather roughly then, but there was plenty of evidence of what had happened.
Were the dead coped with quite quickly? You know, they were buried on the spot, did you find?
Yes.
That had to be, did it, because of the climate?
Yes, yes.
How did you react to that as a young man of 17? You know, when you saw your first dead body, how did it strike you? Were you upset by the experience?
I was upset by the futility of war, but it was just one of those things. It was there and it's got to be done. And that was the price to be paid.
So you soon became inured to it, did you?
Yes, absolutely. You became inured to the most extraordinary things.
What other things? Can you describe the sort of things
When I was singing rather of France then, which was even worse still. Like we now regard Northern Ireland, the casualties, you see two lines now when one of my regiments are shot, but you just got used to it and accepted it.
You mentioned the dreadful flies when, you know, during the hot weather.
Yes, yes.
Were they a bit of a pest? You know, did
terrible pest. Terrible
could you describe pest. What you had to put up with?
The great trouble with the flies was food. Plum and apple jam was the thing, and bully beef, which was pretty hot and runny. But before you could get to your mouth, you had all the flies on it.
Were they big things?
No, not very big. Rather bigger than the average fly here, but that sort of thing. But innumerable flies.
Was there anything you could do about them?
Not really.
How did you manage with things like your latrines? Was that well organised on the peninsula?
Yes, they were well organised. You had a latrine, and then when it got pretty well filled, you know, a lot of excreta, and then you just buried it.
That was well organised the whole time.
Oh yes, yes.
Yes. Were the Turks as fussy in that respect, do you think?
Oh, I think very.
They were fussy.
They're scruffy, yes.
They were scruffy.
You see, oh yes.
Were they? So they wouldn't have bothered so much with latrines.
Not nearly so much. No.
No. I was wondering if you had any unpleasant smells in the hot weather.
Well, we did sometimes, yes, particularly in the front line when there were so many bodies about, which. You've got nauseating smells.
Is that right? You found that there was a sort of close proximity of dead bodies often?
Yes.
Would they have been the Allied bodies or Turks as well?
Oh, they'd have been either, or the French.
What was the sort of system of organising dead bodies, the burial parties? You know, were there any rules established for quick burials?
Not that I know of, really. They were just buried and marked as best one could.
How often, you know, you seem to indicate that the dead bodies created this smell. Would it often be the case that they would be left about on open ground for days on end?
Well, they were left about in no man's land, you see, where you couldn't really do much about it. They weren't left about behind once you got behind the lines, but no man's land was the trouble.
How many would you see in no man's land, dead bodies? I don't want to morbidly dwell on this, but just to get some idea of the problem, would it be a sort of handful or a heap or just an odd one or two?
Oh. Well, all I can say is it varied in various places as to where there'd been an action, you see. But you would see five or six about in your own sector, your own battalion sector.
Was that upsetting to you to know that men were out there, their bodies just lying, uncared for? Did you find that upsetting at all, or did you get used to it?
No, just got used to it.
Do you find that surprising when you look back, how quickly you do get inured to these things?
Yes, you do, yes, yes.
I suppose really it becomes the normal life, does it not?
It absolutely. And I think the older you get, the more you realise the futility of it all.
Is that what you now think?
Yes.
Did you have many problems regarding lice?
Lice? Well, we had lice, yes, I had them too. You just did the best you could about them and tried to get rid of them.
How did you do that? Did you have any little tricks?
Well, we were given a powder which was supposed to help get rid of them. And I think it did to a certain extent, but they were very persistent.
Did you have great delousing sort of ceremonies where you would all try and...
Yes, yes we did.
What did
when
you do?
When we were in reserve.
What would you do then to get rid of them?
Well, you pick them out of your clothes and then use it as powder.
Did they bite and irritate you, the lice?
Not all that much, curiously enough. No, but it was horrible to think they were there.
You mentioned the jaundice, which many men suffered during the hot weather.
Mm.
And I think you said you had it yourself, is that right?
No, not myself. No,
you didn't. No. Did you find that the health remained pretty good, or did men's health suffer with the conditions on Gallipoli while you were there, would you say? What sort of health were the men in?
Well, those that remained fit were very fit and tough, but when they were out of sorts, they were very poorly.
Was there much dysentery?
Not epidemically, there was dysentery, but not all that much.
When did the weather start changing? When did it become cold on the peninsula? Can you remember?
End of October.
What was it like then?
Well, then it became very cold at night. Not so cold in the daytime, very cold at night.
Did you have adequate clothing?
Well, we had blankets in the reserve camp, one blanket each or so.
How about sort of warm clothing to wear?
Not very much, really, except some woolies that were sent out to us by the Red Cross, which was very acceptable.
Did you have any blizzards at all on the peninsula?
Yes, we did, yes.
Could you describe these for me?
When we were in the trenches, there was the notorious blizzard that drowned them almost at Anzac and Subla, but we got it at Helles, but not nearly so, it wasn't so disastrous there. Very severe blizzards it didn't exactly flood the trenches, but the trenches were all under water, your feet were all under water for the time being.
That must have been very miserable.
Yes, it was, but somehow, you just accepted all these things in a most extraordinary way.
Did you have some, hot food and drink to make you feel a little more cheerful under these conditions? How were you situated for this?
Well, we used to get quite good hot food at when we were in reserve, but in the front line you didn't get much hot food.
Could you have made yourself a hot drink, or were you given hot drinks at all? Did they come up the communication trenches with cocoa or anything?
We sometimes got a brew of tea up at night, but only at night, and not every night by any means. But
how about your rum ration? Was this dished out still? I know the Navy have got quite a thing about rum.
Oh, yes.
Did you have your rum ration?
Yes, we had our rum ration, and it was, I think, the envy of the others, because the others didn't get so much as we got being Navy.
Now, that's a real naval tradition, isn't it,
your
rum
ration? Oh, yes,
yes. Well, was that important, do you think, for the men's morale?
Yes, I think it was for us, yes.
You enjoyed it as well, did you?
Yes, I did.
How about a cigarette? Were you able to get a smoke when you wanted one?
Cigarettes are all funny. Very, very rations of cigarettes. And almost the first thing Colonel Wilson said to me when I arrived was, do you smoke? And I said, I haven't smoked yet. And he said, well, we can have your cigarette ration then. And I've never smoked since. I never attempted to smoke.
So you didn't actually smoke in the trenches?
No. I never have smoked.
You must have been quite popular with your cigarette ration going begging.
I didn't see it, no.